Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
There in the bullpen.
The starters are out. Now it's time to head to the bullpen.
Squad, bullpen, now.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Go ahead, call the producers.
Who win it now?
Jose to left, going back on it at the wall, and that ball is off the wall. Coming around a third, and that's a game winner. An RBI double by Jose Altuve, and the Astros walk it off.
Welcome into the bullpen, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5. You hear the Jose Altuve walk-off double from last night. We will start the show with that, but we got college football on the TV, Sean. We got the quad box going.
Yes.
We got Georgia Clemson on the screen. We have West Virginia Penn State. I believe Vandy is surprising some people. Yes. Up 17-0 on Virginia Tech. And we also have the Iowa, I can't see who they're playing.
Illinois State.
I saw like what looked like a Cardinal logo. Yeah. And I didn't think it was Louisville, but I couldn't tell who it was.
Because
we're in the quad box and the logos are a little bit small. But yeah, Astros, look, it feels like we've done this all year. I guess this is more a second half of the year thing when they actually became good. And oh, welcome in. This is the bullpen.
Yes.
Sean Mabes, Brian McDonald. Clutch City Cam not here this week. He'll be back, I guess, in 2 weeks because we're off next week because of the Aggies game. And, of course, Johnny Belber behind the glass. If you want to get into the conversation, we got lots of Astros and Texans to talk. Some college football to start off hour two. Give us a call or a text on the HRMP listener line at 713-780-3776. But it feels like we've done this with the Astros now for the last month or so when they've turned it around, but they'll hit these momentary little blips where they lose a couple games. Most recently, the Astros lose the first two games of the Philly series, and everyone's like, oh my God, you know, like they're going against legit competition. It's a tough stretch, and now their things are falling off. Then they win like 10-0 to close the series. They've taken the first two games from the Royals, who are also above them in the standings. And I guess we're all feeling confident again, question mark?
Yeah, I think that coming off last weekend series in Baltimore where they win, they get the split, but it really felt like they had a good chance to win all four of those
games. Yeah, because the first two games, it definitely feels like a should-have-won-the-series moment.
Yeah, and then on Monday, we're talking about, hey, got the split, that's what you could ask for. Is there any chance that we look back and think, oh, maybe wish you would have had one of these winnable games that you lost back, and they go in and they lose the first two games in Philadelphia, and you're like, oh my God, this is kind of become a disaster.
The yep.
Saturday game,
you had to have those games in Baltimore because now you're getting your ass kicked by the Phillies.
And then, like you said, the last three games, it's been two no-hit bids into the seventh inning for the Astros, mm-hmm. a 10-0 win, a 6-3 win, and then, of course, last night's 3-2 over the Royals. And, yeah, I think that is really kind of a microcosm of, like you said, not just the season, or not the season, but this season since the Astros started winning games. Early in the season, they would just lose all these games.
Yeah, yeah. You didn't have to worry about the ups and downs. They were just down.
They probably lose the last two Royals games if they happened in May.
Oh, like, for sure. Well, yeah, they played this series in April. Remember how that went?
That is true.
Yeah,
is true.
We know how that went. That went very poorly.
I just mean the blowing a lead in the ninth inning or two nights ago now where they needed Keystone Cops.
Yeah,
defense from the Royals where both the pitcher and first baseman hurt themselves in throwing the ball away to lose the game.
Yeah, Vinny Pasquantino.
Yeah, pour one out for my boy Vinny. We need
more baseball players named Vinny.
I would agree with that.
I think we just need more people in general named Vinny. Like outside of movies that portray Italian Americans poorly. Outside of those movies, we need more people.
I think
Sean Mabes supports the mob. You heard it here first.
Hey, listen, they protect the neighborhood.
It's for the kids. They keep the streets clean.
Exactly. It's the sanitation union. What are we talking about?
Astros. So let's talk about Framber Valdez, because okay. You mentioned that, you know, second time in, what, four games that they had a no-hit bid going to the seventh. Framber last night, no-hit, I believe three walks through seven. And let's go ahead and head this off at the pass, because there's going to be someone yelling about it on Twitter or Facebook or wherever people yell about things that don't matter. But Framber Valdez, again, no-hitter through seven, gets pulled at 98 pitches. If you're angry that he got pulled,
yeah.
After okay, I'm looking at you then, Sean. I'm looking right here. Okay, dead in your eyes. If you're angry about getting Framber Valdez in a pennant race this deep into the season, getting pulled after 98 pitches because he had a no hitter through seven, you're an idiot. I'm sorry. And you're well, okay. I'll retract the idiot because I like you. You're short sighted. Okay. You're short sighted.
I am nearsighted. So.
Okay, yeah, we're both wearing glasses. That's not literally what I meant.
Oh, okay.
Okay, it's not literally what I meant.
It's myopia.
But I mean, I think we did a Why So Serious on this with Paul Skeens, but I guess about a month ago now. But I mean, I hope Astros Twitter didn't melt down because he got pulled, because we did see people melt down about, oh my God, Bregman got pulled out of the game and it cost Arrigetti the no-hitter. Ah!
That was a real low point of Astros Twitter.
But Framber,
insane that people are upset.
He's had such a heavy workload the last few years as the horse of the staff, especially as Justin Verlander's either not been on the team because he went to the Mets or been hurt, that I don't want to overwork this guy in August still. We need him at his freshest and his best when he gets into, you know, late September and October, as this pennant race comes down to the final days. It beyond needing to save his arm when you can, and I thought last night it made sense to, even though they obviously had to have the walk-off hit from Altuve because the Josh Hader gave it up. But beyond that, he still had six outs to get. Okay, even if you decide, you know what, screw his arm, screw October, we're going for the no-hitter, which I think is short-sighted because you care about a regular season one game, cool moment over over what could potentially be a deep playoff run. But beyond that, he had six outs to get. It's not like if you leave him in, there's some guarantee he's going to get a no-hitter. We saw Framber Valdez go, 8 2/3 with a no-hitter not that long ago, and he lost it, you know, on the last guy up. So, yeah, I think it's short-sighted for anyone angry that he gets pulled from the no-hitter last night.
I also think if you're Astros fans, and maybe this is real spoiled talk, but
How many
no-hitters do you want to see? Honestly,
literally no team in baseball since the Astros have become a Major League Baseball team, which I think was 62, have more no-hitters than the Houston Astros.
Yeah, either 60 or 62. And, yeah, this is from Sarah Langs last night after Framber took a no-hitter into the seventh. Most no-hit bids of seven-plus innings since the start of 2019, including the playoffs. So, 5 years.
Okay. In which the Astros have had really good pitching staffs during that time.
The Astros are at 17 of those. Next is the Padres at 8. 17 times in the last 5 years, there's been a no-hitter in the seventh inning by the Houston Astros. And I think every single time there's been some part of the fan base that's been complaining about either a guy getting pulled or a third baseman getting pulled for some reason. I think at this point, I don't mean to diminish the accomplishment of no-hitters.
Diminish it.
Do we care if Framber Valdez throws another no-hitter? On average, we're getting three a year?
Yeah.
Over three a year of no-hit bids into the seventh from an Astro.
Yeah.
At some point, it's just I can't get worked up. Like you said, when Framber lost his no-hitter in the ninth earlier this year, I realized, normally, I'd be not crushed, but I'd be pretty
You'd
down.
Be disappointed. Yeah.
I'd be pretty down about it. I'm glad we got the win. That's all.
Because he literally had a no hitter the year prior.
Yes, it's just. I mean, I joked with Jeremy this week about what do you say to all the 4-month-old kids that have never seen an Astros no hitter? Because Literally, they threw one this year.
Yeah, Ronel Blanco's very first start of the season.
One of, I think, only three, maybe even two no-hitters this season.
Blake Snell had a no-hitter.
Snell had one, and Dylan Cease got
Yeah, Dylan Cease had a no-hitter.
So three. Yeah, Ronel Blanco, Dylan Cease, and Blake Snell. Yeah. Unless I'm forgetting someone. That's your no-hitters in baseball this year.
Yeah, and Frommer's obviously had a couple near ones. Spencer Arrighetti as well, but...
Arrighetti 2 days ago.
Yeah, so it's just, I don't get... I mean, you're absolutely right. Like, I mean, John, I mean, when you're watching Nationals games, and it feels like we have this conversation once every 3 weeks because of how often the Astros are taking no hitters deep
Thursday.
In the game. But I mean, does it add to your enjoyment at all at this point? I mean, I guess it adds to the enjoyment. But like, what are your feelings when the no hitters in progress? And like, I don't feel like Sean and I have the same enjoyment as we used to because it's happening so much.
It's not the same as it used to be, right? But it's still a big accomplishment. It's still something that doesn't happen that often across the league or around the league. So it's still something I think you can get excited about when it's happening. But for us, I think it's a little weird that people get so mad at it because the team is so dang good. If you had a team that was horrible, you know, having a no-hitter every once in a while from one of your pitchers, it's a big thing to talk about. Like, you're talking about that. No, for us, it's like, no, we're worried about a World Series. Why are we worried about this no-hitter that almost happened?
Yeah.
I mean, that's a great point. Like, for the Mets, who... historically, for a long, long time, we're like, I think the only franchise in baseball without a no-hitter, and I believe until Johan Santana got them one. I don't remember.
He threw 157 pitches or something. It was never the same.
I remember, I think John Stewart was crying in the stands because the Mets fans had never seen a no-hitter. And I don't think they've had one since, unless maybe DeGrom did one. I don't know. His arm falls off, so I don't know if they would actually try to get him through nine innings. But I could, to John's point, like, if you're the A's, that's a cool moment for your season. The White Sox, that would be a cool moment for your season if Garrett Crochet throws a no-hitter. But when you're the Astros, and not only have you seen more of them than any other team, you know, any other fan base in baseball, but, like, what does it matter for the course of the season? Like, what makes your season a success? It's not a no-hitter.
Yeah, obviously it'll be in, like, Ronel Blanco's, the one that he actually threw this season for the Astros. It'll be on the 2024 Astros highlight package and stuff. And I think for most fan bases, it would probably be the biggest moment that happened for their team that year. If you're not even, you know, you don't even have to go down to the A's and the White Sox. Just even, like, these teams are going to finish with 75 wins, you know, 80 wins. That a no-hitter really is something that your fans can enjoy is probably the biggest moment that your fans are going to have to enjoy your season. With the Astros, that's just not the case because they make the ALCS every year. And this year, they're trying to win the division and maybe even climb up. Even after starting 7-19, they're trying to climb up to a bye, either the 1 or 2 seed, and make another ALCS
still
year. That is still what the goals are. So, yeah. You have to keep that in mind when your pitcher, your best pitcher, is at 98 pitches after 7 innings of no-hit ball. You pass the ball to Brian Abreu and hope he gets 3 outs, and then Josh Hader gets 3 outs. That's just what you do.
Yeah, let's actually talk about what Frommer did last night, beyond the idea of,
pulled?
My God.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, getting pulled, exactly.
What else
How
did
dare
he do?
You, Joe Espada? We didn't think you're going to be AJ Hinch pulling out Zach Greinke, not putting in Garrett Cole. How dare you,
This is
sir?
An equal decision.
Yes. So, yeah, exactly. Same level of consequence, exactly. No-hitters are – you get rings for no-hitters, right? We put up a banner? No? Okay. So, Frommer Valdez, I think a lot of the conversation from, you know, last year, especially second half, where he had a no-hitter right in the middle of it, was like, man, he's so up and down, he's inconsistent, and he's mentally weak, blah, 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 soft, as Jeremy would say.
Mm-hmm. That is what he would say.
That's what he would say. That's kind of Jeremy's bag. But you look at Fromber, and this dominance goes back a little bit further, but I just did for a clean start date, June 1st through now, we're looking at 16 starts for Fromber, and over that time, his ERA is 2.54. Mm. I mean, he's exactly the type of pitcher he was in the first half of last season when he was, like, top three for Cy Young on basically every odds board. So I feel pretty comfortable saying, like, great Fromber is back. And I don't know how you could have – I know there will be some people who want to put JV out there because he's JV, he's the Hall of Famer, whatever. But if the Astros do win the division and get to the playoffs, is there any conversation or doubt that Fromber's your game one starter?
No, in my mind, no. I don't really think of a – there's a case for Verlander versus Fromber. I mean, I remember on, what was it, Thursday, after Spencer Arrighetti threw seven,
he was amazing.
No-hit innings.
Yeah.
We're talking about Arrighetti or Verlander in a playoff rotation. So I think Fromber is pretty nailed in as your number one starter. Then maybe it depends on whether you're on the series home or road, if you want to start Verlander in a road game for game two or Hunter Brown. I feel like that's more of the decision at this point, because as much as we love what Arrighetti's done as of late, I do think that the playoffs are a little bit different of a stage, and that's ultimately what Verlander is here to do, is to be the guy. He's pitched in all these big moments before, so I think Verlander still has a spot in the playoff rotation, but Fromber's number one, I think, pretty easily.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, we're going to carry a little bit of this Astros conversation over to the other side, get an update on Kyle Tucker, and I'll ask Sean and John Belmer where their sweat level is right now on the AL West race, with the Astros currently leading the Mariners by 4 wins. Thank you, Sean, for checking your pits there. I don't see any sweat, so
no.
we might already have Sean's answer. That one, the bullpen returns on ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5. Welcome back into the bullpen. If you want to get on the conversation, give us a call or text on the HRMP listener line. You can reach us at 713-780-3776, or you can find us on Twitter. I'm Brian McDonald, and I'm on Twitter at SackbackBMAC. Sean's at Sean A. Mapes, and John Belmer is at Third Coast Johnny. Did I get that right? For some reason, I just had him like a momentary... yeah. I had a momentary lapse where I was like, holy crap, I think I might have got that one wrong. But no,
right?
I did not. Yeah, not really, no.
Okay.
As you can probably hear in my voice, I'm dealing with a little something, which, as Sean knows, because he's doing shows with me every weekend, that's pretty much been the case for the last month.
Yeah.
It's been a rough stretch. When you have a three-year-old, you know, sometimes you catch stuff.
A lot of cough drops.
Especially now that my daughter's in school. So not only do I have her, but I've got all the other kids who can also pass stuff to her.
Yeah.
It's a lot sometimes. I don't really recommend kids, just for, okay. I mean, you guys both don't have some, so you can prevent that decision.
And Brian, I think we work well together on the show.
Thank you.
I would like to say that maybe we even are friends. I wasn't waiting on your recommendation for kids to have them or not have them. I appreciate the input. I was just...
Johnny, were you waiting on my recommendation to have kids?
It's going to have very little impact on me.
Yeah, I'm going to have kids tomorrow now.
Oh, okay.
Thanks, B-Mac.
Okay. Well, I told you don't, so apparently Johnny's just going to do the opposite of whatever I tell him.
Okay, well, so then I'm just changing my mind. I'm never going to have kids.
Don't get us a pizza now, right, John? Okay, anyway, I thought I'd try it out, the reverse psychology. Wow. I don't know. Hey, see if it works.
Worth a shot.
What's
the worst that could happen?
Hey, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take, right, Sean? I'm sure there's, yeah, exactly. That's up on a motivational poster somewhere. Astros stuff, that's what we're talking about. So Kyle Tucker, I don't know if you guys know this, he's missed a few games.
Yeah,
he's been a little bit hurt. So apparently there might be light at the end of the tunnel. Maybe the rainbow is not so far away. A couple of updates, one from Channel Rome here. Apparently Kyle Tucker said he's running at around 75% effort. I'd love to see how they calibrate that. It's like, I'm kind of like 74, like maybe upwards of 75, but whatever. Anyway, he's running at 75% effort and feels relatively pain-free. I love that the word relatively is...
Yeah.
Wait, hold on. All right, I'm going to stop the quote. If you're only running at 75% and it's only relatively pain-free, isn't that kind of still a big problem?
It depends how relative, you know? It's like... Maybe he's wearing uncomfortable shoes.
Let me throw another factor in, though.
Okay.
It's the Astros.
Yeah.
What? And you can't trust anything they tell you.
No. Why not?
I don't know. Alex Bregman. Well, I mean, Kyle Tucker's still hurt. When they told us initially he wasn't even going to go on the IL on June 3rd.
Maybe he just slept wrong.
Yeah, thank you, Alex Bregman. So anyway, he's running around 75% effort and feels relatively pain-free, though some tightness and soreness still appears. he and the Astros are talking, and this is Channel Rome, he and the Astros are talking through various options for him, some of which involve skipping a rehab assignment entirely, a fluid situation. More for McTaggart, Kyle Tucker provided a long update on his condition just now and said it's an option, quote, to play in Cincinnati next week, but most likely he'll return next homestand, which I believe is like September 5th or 7th, somewhere around there. So, I mean, let's start off with part of this. I guess the first obvious question is, do you buy any of this update that he's 75%, you know, pain, or he's running at 75%, he's relatively pain-free, and he can return without a rehab stint?
I don't know about the specific numbers that are getting thrown around with the Astros.
I mean, maybe he's running like 71%.
Yeah, exactly. 78. Yeah. I think, though, that the idea that he is coming back relatively soon, I tend to believe that. I think with the way that they're talking about it and the way that they're kind of ramping up what he's doing before games, I think that speaks to there is progress being made. I know the Astros don't deserve any benefit of the doubt with that kind of stuff, but right. At the end of the day, like, what he is doing before games is getting more and more intensive as opposed to doing something pretty light every once in a while. Now he's pretty regularly doing more high intensity stuff before games. And as far as him coming back without a rehab assignment, I'm kind of fine with that.
I mean, Altuve sometimes does that.
Yeah, and I mean,
but when Altuve's doing it, he's usually only been out a couple weeks. I mean, at this point, so I looked it up. The next homestand starts on Friday, September 6th. Mm-hmm. So being out from June 3rd, we're talking about a 3-month absence for Kyle Tucker. You would figure, even if in that time, between now and September 6th, let's say he goes up from 75% to 95%, and he's good to go. Even if that's the case and he's good to go, like he's healthy, physically he's able to go. I mean, you've been out for 3 months. I mean, don't you have to have some sort of spring training, quote unquote, and like get your timing and
but
your rhythm back?
He's been taking live batting practice for like a month now.
Yeah, I mean, does that really replicate like what you're going to face against the Diamondbacks, who's that first homestand or that next homestand?
I think with the way that Mauricio Dubon, the way that Jake Myers,
okay.
The way that
yeah, no, you're right.
You're
good point. Good
you're
point.
Depending
you, you
on
sold me. You
you're
sold
depending
me.
On Jason Hayward and Ben Gamble, who both of which have been good in their brief cameos.
Gamble homered last night.
I'm
buddy.
A big Gamble guy. you don't need to tell me. I'm a
hell.
Huge
Jason
Gamble
Hayward
guy.
Had a 2-run double on 2 nights ago.
Yes, but we're dealing with Gamble and Hayward on small sample sizes. I'm saying that
the best sample size.
I'm saying that Kyle Tucker working himself into shape or working himself into major league timing, I think that's worth the extra. What? How long was rehab assignment even going to be? Four days?
Probably, yeah. I would say about a week, maybe.
Yeah. So I think that just getting him up here, just get it, because it's not anything, you know, it's not the like the physical toll of being in the majors versus the minors. It is just the hitting aspect of it. And the guys he's replacing in the lineup aren't hitting much better than what I imagine a Kyle Tucker still kind of figuring things out is going to hit. And again, a lot of the timing stuff you can replicate now with some of the tools they have, not just with live BP, but they have different like kind of TrackMan tools and stuff like that where you can face like very realistic hitting where they can put the like spin on the ball that you actually are going to see from like the RPMs that you're going to see from that specific pitcher that's pitching.
I guess maybe the old man in me is like, live batters.
You got to see it
you
out of the
live
hand.
Pitchers,
you got to see it out of the hand.
You got to see it out of the hand. You got to pick up the spin.
No, I
take it the other, grip up, take it the other way.
I don't completely discount that. And I think if we're in a situation where you feel better about how Dubon or Chaz McCormick.
That's just it. Yeah.
If the outfield of the Astros was playing a little bit better, where you could go like, hey, we're not in a rush to replace these guys.
You are in a rush to replace those guys. Just, that's the problem. That's what changes things.
If Kyle Tucker replaces Jake Myers in the lineup and they have Hayward play center field or whatever, it's not the worst thing in the world to me.
Yeah, I think that's the point that kind of brings me around, because when I first saw that, because it was especially since it was presented as Kyle Tucker prefers not to do.
Yeah.
I was like, What, because you just don't want to go to Oklahoma City? Is that the problem? Like, well, I mean, you don't want to go play at the Salt Lake Bees? What's the issue here?
I mean, I agree with that.
I mean, I agree with that. But, you know, I was a little kind of my the eyebrow raised a little bit on that. But as you broke it down, it's like, I mean, you kind of made the point like, well, yeah, true, that's not ideal, but, like, you'd rather keep hitting Mauricio Dubon?
You're just going to replace a 180 or 210 hitter.
Yeah. Like, even if Kyle Tucker sucks when he comes back, it's not like he would be that far below what you're currently getting in those spots anyway. So you might as well let him come up and suck for, you know, a week to get his timing back, because what you would have in that spot anyway would also suck.
And I'm also viewing this as, I mean, at this point he's missed so much of the year. And, I mean, when he got hurt, they're almost completely out of it. Now they are pretty locked in. Not locked in, but they have a...
four-game lead in the
division.
They have
a comfortable lead in the AL West, where I'm almost treating September for Kyle Tucker as that this is his rehab assignment for the playoffs.
Okay.
Where it is, he is working himself. I don't think he needs to work himself to prepare to play on September 10th or September 14th or September 17th. It is get him up as quickly as he's comfortable doing in the majors, so that he can be the best hitter he is on October 2nd, 3rd, 4th, whenever their first game is.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. So, I mean, you hit on the AL West race there. That was the other question for this segment. So, Astros right now with a four-game lead over the Mariners. They also won last night, so unfortunately weren't able to add a game back to that lead, which was five, I guess, about a week and a half ago. But right now it's four. So the question would be, like, I mean, how much are you sweating this AL West race? Because when the Astros were losing, you know, two games of Baltimore, they lost two in Philly. I believe the Mariners got it down to three. I don't know if it got as low as 2.5, but I think people were starting to feel a little bit of panic. Not only because the Astros weren't winning games, but when you look ahead at the Mariners schedule, they definitely have the easier of the two schedules in September, and especially six of the Mariners' next six games right now are against the A's and the Angels. So I guess the question for John and for Sean, like, how much are you sweating the AL West race right now? Are you feeling confident that they're going to hold on to this lead, or do you look at the schedule going like, they better play well or the Mariners could pass
it? I'm feeling pretty confident. They do have to still play well, but I think it's more the doubt I have about the Mariners, where if the two teams are equal, then yes, I think the difference in schedule could be the difference in the division, but I don't think the Mariners are playing as well as the Astros are right now. And so with that in mind, I think the Astros still need to play well. They still need to go out there and win it. The Mariners aren't going to go out there and lose it. But I think with what I expect from the Astros the rest of the way, now that they are almost done with this really hard, the gauntlet part of their more difficult schedule.
Yeah, Orioles, Phillies, Royals is brutal.
And you mentioned that the Mariners have six straight against the A's and the Angels.
Yeah, they're playing the Angels right now. Then they have a four-game series against the A's.
And I'm pretty sure that the Astros have two series against the Angels left and one series against the A's left.
That is true.
So that it is going to come out in the wash. Now, they're not consecutive. There's going to be a Diamondback series and I think another playoff team
they have the Guardians in the year in
Guardians,
Cleveland.
Yes. Yeah. So it's going to be a little bit more difficult, but as far as like the division games that they play, they're going to play the same division games, about the same amount of these division games too.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you, Sean, here. I think if everything's equal, if all things are equal, then I'm a little more worried about that schedule playing a factor. But I don't think the Mariners can score runs. I mean, their offense is really been bad. And the Astros have become more well-rounded. And, you know, they have the tougher schedule going forward here for a little while. But recently they've been playing well against good teams. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe they beat, I think they took two out of three against Boston, maybe even swept Boston.
They swept Boston.
You know, they didn't do as good against Philadelphia here recently, but they played well against the Orioles. They're beating Kansas City, who is not a great team, but they have a good record and they have a better record
than the Astros.
Yeah. And they're fighting for a playoff spot, but, you know, nobody expects them to make a run at the World Series or anything. I think the Astros are fine. They play better against good teams down the stretch here, and I think they're just the better team. The lead is big enough to where I'm not sweating it at all.
That's the other thing, is that these teams
aren't even in the
way that they're playing right now, and they're also not even in the standings.
Yeah, they're not even in the standings. They're not even on the roster. Like, as John mentioned, the Mariners offense sucks. Even after trading for Randy Arozarena and Justin Turner, like those were Band-Aids on a gunshot wound, essentially. That offense was not going to go from second worst ahead of only the White Sox to something that you fear just because you added Arozarena and Justin Turner. So, yeah, I think the schedule is something to look at and keep an eye on. But because the Astros are playing so much better than the Mariners, plus obviously the four-game lead factors in, and you have a series at home against the Mariners where you could directly hopefully, to the lead in the division coming up, I believe, middle of September. Yeah, for those reasons, I'm not really sweating it at this point. All right, we got to get out. A little overdue for a break here. When we come back on the other side of the break, going to get into the Texans, including an article from the Toro Times, which suggested three Texans players that should be traded, or I guess could be traded, now that we're past the roster cutdowns. Two of them make complete sense. The other one, I think, should come with a drug test. It's an opinion so bad that I was concerned for this man's well-being. But that more when we get back on the bullpen. ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. Is the Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Welcome back in. ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5. We're going to talk Texans here in a second. Obviously following along with the college football action as well, because Sean and I got some money on these games. We both have money on Georgia to cover. I think we got him. Well, you got him at minus 14. I was able to get him at minus 12.
Yes.
And then I have money on Penn State covering minus 13 against West Virginia. You got any other action today? I know you got action on the LSU game tomorrow.
Yes. I don't have any sides for the rest of the day here on Saturday, but I have the under in the primetime game, Notre Dame.
I have Notre Dame plus 3 in that game. Sorry.
Yes. And I have the under in Miami, Florida.
Oh, okay. All right. So if you want to join in the conversation, let us know what you got money on, what you're following. Want to chime in on this, any of this Texans and Astros stuff, give us a call on the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. But talking Texans now, because there was an article put out by Chad Porto of Toro Times, who I'm sure does great work 99% of the time.
Whoa.
And 66% of this article he does was great. And I agree with it. The other 33.33%.
So 99% of the time he does great.
Yeah, this is some real Yogi Berra math about to happen. Go ahead.
Steiner math. Sports
entertainment.
And 66% of the time.
Because I'm a genetic freak. That gives me 131.3% chance of victory over you, Samoa Joe. No?
John has no idea what I'm uncomfortable being called Samoa Joe and the cultural appropriation implications of that. So I would like to distance myself from
Caucasian Sean?
I mean, that's almost worse.
Is that almost worse? Is that worse? Okay. All right. Yeah, I don't know where to go from there.
Just don't call people by their race and first name.
Granato does it.
He sure does.
I mean, he's in the Hall of Fame. Shouldn't I be trying to follow his path?
Yeah. I think you should.
I think some things John can get away with.
Yeah, I think your logic's a little flawed.
Yeah, I think you should be trying to do the Brian McDonald path.
That's not why John's in the Hall of Fame. It didn't prevent him from getting there.
That'd be funny if it was, though.
we like the cut of his gym, the way he talks about insert race. Anyway, quickly getting out of this before we get in trouble here. So this article from Toro Times suggested three trades that could or should happen, or players to be traded away that could or should happen for the Houston Texans now that they're past the roster cutdown. And like I said, two of the names on this list make a lot of sense. One of those being running back Damian Pierce and, quote, one of the backup wide receivers. So John Metchie, Xavier Hutchinson, Robert Woods. And there was a lot of rumors on Metchie being asked after by other NFL teams. And we've obviously heard lots of rumors about Damian Pierce being asked about, or at least the idea that the Texans would be open to it. Since they signed Cam Akers and Joe Mixon to start. So, I mean, those make sense. I think if we were to come in and there was news of the Texans have traded, you know, John Metchie for, let's say, pie in the sky, fourth-round pick I think most of us would be like, okay, that's fine. Yeah. Like, I mean, sure, I mean, he was a second-round pick. We saw potential. But, like, I think overall we would be fine if we came in and saw that John Metchie was traded for a fourth or Dameon Pierce was traded for, like, a fifth, sixth swap. I mean, that wouldn't raise any eyebrows, I don't think.
No, both those make sense because they are kind of in spots where
they don't really need them.
Yes, and there's a little bit of a roster crunch there with how many guys they're going to keep in both those positions. I mean, I think the Texans kept 7 wide receivers.
They did, yeah, because they included Steven Sims, who's going to be mostly used as a return guy.
That's why it wouldn't have surprised me, especially if Metchie or, I mean, Woods, or and it ended up being Brown getting cut. But if one extra guy were either traded or cut, that wouldn't have surprised me. So, yeah, so far,
it's great.
It's nothing.
66% of this list is great, but... Yes.
I don't know. Dramatic.
Dramatic set. Pause. Look, man, I'm battling. Anyway, but
I thought that was only for dramatic effect.
No, it was not. It was trying to keep the cough off the air because
played along. Theater of the mind.
Actually, no. I should lean into the cough. That's what got Granato and Lance Erlein into the Hall of Fame, right?
Please don't start coughing.
I'm going to try to, Johnny. I'm sorry. The other part of this list, the 33% that is. I should come with a drug test.
Wait, okay. So one of the backup receivers is one of the selections?
Yes.
So of the 66.7% that makes sense, how many wide receivers make sense?
No. I'm not in radio because I'm good at math, Sean. I struggled, okay?
I don't think it made sense to trade Xavier Hutchinson, so I think only 55.
Oh, Big Papa Pump. Help me. Help me, Big Papa Pump. No, I'm not going to do that math. I refuse. I go to the next part. So here's the part that doesn't make sense.
Okay.
He suggests one of the other people that should or could be traded that makes sense for the Houston Texans is Christian Harris, which for so many reasons makes no sense. One, you have so little depth at linebacker.
Yeah.
I mean, you have Azeez Al-Shaair, Christian Harris, who isn't healthy, and...
Henry Toa-Toa.
I'll repeat it. And, like, because I don't, I mean, Henry Toa-Toa is nice depth, but I don't think anyone's excited about, you know, second year Henry Toa-Toa starting at linebacker until Christian Harris gets back.
Yeah, I was going to say, he's fine as the third linebacker.
He's fine when you don't have to play him.
Yeah, or just like rotational kind of duty.
Right.
And yes, even the start of the season here, luckily the Texans at the start of the season don't play any of these super tough quarterbacks. Those come later.
Yeah, they get the Vikings and...
I mean, the Bills, I think, in week 6. That's about...
You want him back for that, yeah.
But I think Henry Toa-Toa playing against, you know, rookie Caleb Williams, Anthony Richardson, who's basically redshirt rookie, Sam Darnold, Drake May, or Jacoby Brissett. Like, these games, it's all right that Harris isn't going to be out there. But I think come later in the season... They're really going to need Harris.
So that's one problem. Like, you have zero depth and not a lot of talent at linebacker outside of two guys. So I don't know why Christian Harris would make sense as a trade target when you trade him. Unless you're trading him for another linebacker, you already have a problem at linebacker as far as depth and overall talent. Then you'd be creating even a further weak spot. So it falls apart right there. But going beyond that, I don't think many teams are going to be trading for a guy who is currently out for 4 games on PUP. If a team was interested in Christian Harris, which there should be because he was a good player, especially second half of last season and in the playoffs. But if they're interested in him, they're going to wait till he gets back. They're not going to trade for him right now. So he's out for at least 4 weeks. We'll see when he actually returns. But
is this year 2? For Harris?
No, he wasn't a rookie. Yeah, this must be year 3. Because, he was drafted the same year as John Metchie.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's
and Derek right. Stingley. He was in that same draft.
That was
draft.
The draft they picked all SEC guys.
Exactly. Kenyon Green as well, Derek Stingley. There's a lot of SEC in
Henry
that draft.
Toa-Toa.
Henry Toa-Toa, yeah.
Yeah, okay, so...
Dameon Pierce. Holy crap, was the entire draft SEC?
It was the entire SEC. Or, I think they picked one non-SEC player in that 21 draft.
I'm struggling to think of who it was.
It was the 22 draft. I could only see it. I was trying to give who's this writer's name?
Not Christian. That's Chad Porto.
I was trying to give Chad Porto. I was trying to see if maybe there's a contract thing with Harris where trade him before you have to pay him.
That doesn't really exist.
No, and with the Texans being kind of win now, you'd just figure it out later. So, yeah, I really do struggle to
I can't find the logic here.
It's almost like he needed a third person to add to the list and was looking through the roster and was like, I just don't know.
I think he was looking for a name. If you're going to post the article with the accompanying headline photo, you got Damien Pierce, like maybe third string running back, but at least a backup, and a group of wide receiver depth. Like, you need the name to get people to click on. I think you hit on something, John. I think Christian Harris was more of like, I need somebody that's actually going to draw some views in.
Could, and maybe it's a different position, so maybe this is why. But, and I do not think that this guy should be traded by the Houston Texans. But
I sense a hot take coming.
But I'm just saying, if you were going to write this article and you're going to say, hey, I need one, Damien Pierce and one of the backup receivers isn't
sexy enough. Yeah.
Yeah. Wouldn't you go with like Tytus Howard?
Yeah. That would actually be the more yeah, especially
more
since
obvious.
You have Blake Fisher that like you can make the case. Like, I would feel
they
better.
They drafted his replacement.
Yeah.
We can try it out and see if it works. I'll name the podcast Sean Wants to Trade Tytus Howard.
Okay.
We'll see how many clicks
make
we
sure
get.
To put the bookmark for the time and everything.
We'll definitely get a retweet from Tytus Howard or a comment from Tytus
Howard.
Well,
only if Jeremy first retweets us because they might still be beefing. I don't know.
I think they should trade their left guard, Tytus Howard.
Wow, you went extra hard after calling him a left guard. He's right tackle only, buddy. Don't you forget it.
That's what I've heard. Yeah, no, but I think if you were going to do like the – if we're going to view this in a more cynical way, like that's kind of what I would do because the case makes itself a little bit more presentable. I mean, I'm looking at the write-up for the Christian Harris part, and they bring up the injury history, the fact he's on injured reserve. And
they also bring up inconsistent plays. Like, I get it maybe if you look at an overall, but what you saw the last half of last season playoffs was not inconsistent.
Yeah.
I'm not worried about what happened in his rookie year. He's playing well. I mean, not right now, actually, but in the most recent play, he was playing really well.
Yeah. There's this two-sentence stretch. This only happens if Jake Hansen plays well in his stead and if the rest of the linebacking core doesn't look awful while he's out. If guys like Henry Toa can't play better in 24 than they did in 23, then you're not going to move Harris in a trade.
So he answered his own question.
Yes.
Because that's the things he said, Jake Hansen and Henry Toa playing to a point where you don't need Christian Harris. Ain't going to happen.
Yeah, I doubt that. So, yeah, I mean,
it's dead. All right, let's talk about some we're going to talk about it from a Texans angle, but I've got a fantasy draft actually right after the show's over.
Whoa.
I'm headed over to I'm actually going to watch the Longhorns game and draft basically at the same time. Longhorns game starts at 2:30. My draft starts at 3 over at Jake's on Chimney Rock. So,
go swing by.
Yeah, swing by.
Say what's up to Brian.
Tell me who to tell me what round I should take a kicker. It better not be before the last round. But let's on the other side of the break. We'll stick with a mostly Texans angle to this. Let's talk about some fantasy football, some projections for the Texans, and a little bit over under on their stat projections, and where you'd be willing to take, or what Texans you'd be most and least willing to take in your fantasy drafts coming up. That when the bullpen returns, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. This is the Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Welcome back into the Bullpen, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5. We're going to get to, obviously, Mount Rushmore plus one next hour at 1:30, as we always do. And coming up at 1:15, Michael Carroll walked in the building. And so we're going to rope him in to join in on the big question. I had to pull the leg a little bit. I don't think he wanted to do it at first.
No, he definitely
did
not.
Yeah, he was like, I don't got time for you guys.
He said he was behind.
I'm here on a Saturday. You think I got time for you guys?
He said he was behind because he co-hosted with Raheel yesterday. Yeah. And then Brian was like, well, do you want to be more behind? And believe it or not,
he did it.
Michael Carroll was
I
like,
couldn't believe
no,
it.
I'm good on that. And yeah, you're able
and then
to
I was able
harangue
to successfully
him
guilt trip him into doing it. Yeah. So I think he's going to join us at 1:15. I might even try to guilt trip him further. See if he's
I feel
guilty. Go away, Michael. It's not 1:15.
Oh, I'm
go back to your cave.
Okay.
People, you know what? You can see Michael's cave if you come out to the listener party, Sean. It's that time of year. It's, that was a professional transition. Mark that, Johnny Belmer. Send that to Marconi or whoever does the awards. That'll get me in the Hall of Fame, Jordan John Lance.
This is a Hall of Fame performance.
This is a Hall of Fame performance. So it's that time of year again.
Not only will you see Michael Carroll's cave, yeah. You'll see so much more.
So much more, yeah. All the things, like our refrigerator maybe, like the table we sometimes eat at and spill food on and don't really clean.
Dirt that's in the studio.
Yeah, the dirt that's to my left here on the floor, all those things. So it's that time of year again where we want to thank our loyal listeners at our 2024 Listener Appreciation Party. Join the broadcast, editorial, and management team of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 for an evening of food, drinks, and fun at the home of Gal Media here in the Galleria area. While you're here, make sure to weave your way in and out of our production side of the building for a behind-the-scenes look at where and how your favorite shows and videos are made. A limited amount of guaranteed admission tickets are available for purchase and includes food and drink. Must be 21 or older to attend. Head to ESPN975.com under the promotions tab to secure your tickets today. So, Texans, fantasy. Let's get into some of that. PFF put out some offensive projections for the Texans, you know, biggest offensive weapons. Obviously, they usually put those out, especially from a fantasy side. For the defensive guys. So let's start with C.J. Stroud right at the top here, a quarterback. I think they are pretty dead on with this number, guys, because if you look at what he was on pace for last year, it was right about this number. So this is probably the toughest one on the board for me, but they have C.J. Stroud's his passing total number at 4,556. You guys over or under on that number?
It's tough because penciling in basically 4,600 passing yards, it's a lot.
It's a tall ask.
You almost need – I mean –
it's only happened once in franchise history.
Yes, and you need to play 16 – I was going to say 17.
At least 16.
I was going to say 17 games, but the guy who did it did in 16.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, that's true.
But you do,
shout out to Matt Schaub.
You do need to play the entire season to do it. I think I would have gone under except for on Tuesday on Galat and George, we had DJ, and we're talking about the DJ Bienaimé, ESPN reporter for the Texans. And we had, we're talking to him about the Mike Sando tears from the Athletic that came out this week. And he just pretty casually dropped that, like, yeah, CJ Stroud probably looking at about 5,000 yards passing. I was like, 5,000? And DJ isn't a guy who just throws out hyperbole. For hyperbole's sake.
Yeah, you're right. I don't take him as that sort of guy.
And so I think just off the confidence of which that DJ said that, I'm going to go over on basically 45-50 on passing yards for CJ.
John, where are you at?
Yeah, I'm going to go over too. I was actually so last night I was watching the Pivot podcast on YouTube. They had Tank Dell on, and he was kind of talking about the offense specifically and Stroud's ability to get everybody the ball and how it's not going to a specific person, it's going to whoever's open. And he specifically talked about how having three number one receivers opens up the field, and I think that will be available to him all the time. He's going to go to who's open, and that's going to equate to a lot of yards. I'm going to go ahead and go over as well.
Man, half of that Tank quote would have really excited Paul. That's just going to throw it to whoever's wide open. And then he had to go and say there's three number one wide receiver one. So Paul's, he had him in, and now he's out again. Yeah, he's he's like that Alonzo Mourning gift. Like,
yeah.
Anyway. I would take over two. It's going to be close. I don't share DJ's confidence of 5,000 yards. I mean, it's certainly within the realm of possibility when you have three receivers like you have, plus Dalton Schultz, plus Joe Mixon's not a terrible receiver. I mean, but I would bet the over, but I would probably bet it with hoping he gets to just over 46 and probably not be thinking he gets to 5,000.
I was going to say, DJ doesn't have to be right for this thing to go over, but I think that his expectation setting kind of pulls me over the hump to take the over.
All right, next one on the list, Joe Mixon. This one was the easiest one on the board for me. And unfortunately, it's on the negative side from a Houston Texans rooting interest. But they have his rushing yardage total projected at 1,298. You want to guess how many times Joe Mixon has done that in his career?
Once?
Zero.
Ooh.
He has done that zero times in his career. Now, to be fair, He did go for 1205 in the 2021 season. So if he had the extra game, he probably goes over that. But yeah. still, I mean, he would still need, you know, 94 yards or something. He would still need a really good game to get there.
About the average.
Yeah.
That's, like about his per game average.
Right. So that would have been a tough ask. But, I mean, for a guy who's never reached that total, now obviously in his oldest season ever. I mean, funny how that works. Everybody's in their oldest season ever. Yeah.
Is that a reason to doubt the Houston Texans? Because every one of the players
is in their oldest season ever. It's an unbelievable shot. I can't believe they constructed the roster.
Why did Nick Caserio do this?
I don't know.
Why didn't they sign Benjamin Button?
But 1298 for Joe Mixon?
That's a lot.
I mean, even if he wasn't a 28-year-old running back who had never done that before, you got, as Tank Dell said, three number one wide receivers. They're going to be probably a 60%, you know, pass team, I would guess.
Well, yes.
I'm going way, way under.
See, and I can't do that because this is where it literally says on their total yards. So you're including Stroud throwing the ball.
You know what? I misread that. Okay,
so I think this is much more possible than you're leading. And if you're just talking rushing yards, yeah, it's tough to think that he would get there, especially with the lack of success.
Good catch.
But if he's catching the ball out of the backfield, this is possible.
Okay. Yeah, he would have done this about three times.
Yeah, I was
going to
say
he's
a pretty good receiving back. He's also a three down guy, and there's really no one on the Texans that's really pushing him from behind. A lot of what we've been talking about with the running backs in the preseason was more about them kind of fighting for that running back two spot. Sorry, Paul. There's no real point where we thought Cam Akers was going to share the load. Like, this is going to be some work running back by committee with Mixon. I think with John pointing it out, I still might go under, and this is more of a health thing, which is not like the sexy thing to take into account.
That's a very old guy football take. Well, if they stay healthy.
No, I'm saying the under because I don't think Mixon stays healthy to play all these games. He already missed the first two-thirds of training camp, first half of training camp. With some soft tissue, with a hamstring injury.
Hamstrings always heal up nicely, though. They never linger.
Yes. And so I think I go under on here also because the rushing yards is where you're going to get a bulk of these for Mixon. And I like you, am not super high on the rushing offense for this Texans team because you basically need Mixon to get up around probably 1,000 to get to 1,300 total. About 300 receiving yards, 1,000 rushing is where you need to go.
I don't think he's getting to 1,000.
Yeah, and I don't think he's getting to 1,000 rushing yards. So I'm going to go over for that reason. Or right. Under. I'm going to go under.
All right, so quickly, let's group these together. Just tell me which one you're most willing to play the over on for the three wide receivers. The three wide receiver one, shout out to Paul Gallant. Nico Collins is at 1,100 yards on the dot. Tate Dell at 1,070. And Stephon Diggs at 957. Who are you most willing to bet the over on?
On their number.
Yeah.
That's tough. Because Nico, the over-unders that I've seen, or the player props.
Last time we were at LeBurge, I got him at a thousand point five. Yeah.
I've seen him on like 99.5 for prize picks, so for their season-long projection stuff. So I do think Nico's probably gets the most yards on this team. Or I would say Nico's probably the best bet to get the most yards on this team. So I'll go over on Nico at 1,100.
Yeah, I would go over too. I think Nico's going to lead the team in yards automatically. I think he's going to get more than 1,100, especially if you're expecting C.J. Stroud to go over on his.
Yeah,
but he's also the guy of the three that I have the least amount of questions on usage. I think Nico Collins is 100% your number one look, the guy that's going to be out in the field, you know, 90% of the time. Whereas Stephon Diggs and Tank Dell, you know, some of them could be going in and out of the slot. There might be some times in two wide receiver sets where one of them gets pulled for the other one. But Nico, I think, is that X that's always going to be there. So I'm most willing to go over on Nico. John, where are you at with this?
This is the toughest out of all the questions that we went through so far, for sure. But I'm actually on that Nico train as well. His ability to get yards after the catch to me takes it. Takes him above that.
Yeah, and what you brought up with Tank and Diggs, I think those two are going to be the guys that are really, like, when we talk about there's only one ball for all three of these guys. I think that those two guys are really going to feel it the most, bumping down a rung on the wide receiver hierarchy that they're used to, or I guess from last year in Tank's case. And for Diggs' entire career, he's been a one or two. So I think this is really where you're going to feel it. Diggs at 95 or at 950. That's like,
it feels like
that's about right. I would not be surprised if he's very,
I think,
close.
He plays
to that.
Mostly the slot.
He does, and Tank Dell being a little bit smaller.
Which sounds crazy because Tank Dell's Jose Altuve size.
Yeah. And so now you're gonna have to play him on the outside, which he did a little bit last year.
And he did it in college too.
Yeah. But yeah, I'm not quite confident enough in either of those guys to take the over.
All right, let's carry over a little bit of the conversation for the Texans and fantasy. Which Texan are you most likely to draft? And then after that, we'll get into some college football. That when the bullpen returns for hour two on ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.